This is Field Officer 60302, Gwen Ortiz, recording log one, yes, log one, for what I'm referring to as the Shattering Incident. Not an official title, just my little term for it, insider's lingo. The date is the 27th of August, 2021, at 19:45. As per the Field Officer Safety Act of 1992, I'm legally required to tell everything and anything regarding my assignment to the proper authorities. Whatever that means. I guess it's just some weird legal thing since I'm not a police officer or anything. Field officer, that's what I am. As Detective Larson said, "You're not an officer of the law, Ortiz. You can't arrest anyone. You can't use a gun. You can't obtain a warrant. Get your head out of your ass, do your assignment, and record the damn memos." Righto, sir. Alright, back to business. According to the newly instated Field Workers Handbook, page 12, I am required to disclose anything and everything concerning the investigation, yada yada, including things I may or may not deem relevant, pertaining but not limited to personal information, things pertaining tangentially to my assignment, and any background information. What the? Well, that's incredibly invasive. Guess that's why you should read the fine print before committing to something. Not like I really had much of a choice. I'll just start with the background about the main incident, and then discuss my latest discoveries. It started about a week ago. 8 days? The six of us glassmenders in City were in our back office of the police station as usual. The job is boring-ass office work most of the time. There's no other way to say it. Can I swear on these memos? You know what? I don't even care. It'll make it more authentic. Anyway, paper shuffling, emails, memos, microtasks. The real reason we're there mostly happens at night. Glass usually gets shattered at night. There's something about the night that brings out the deviance in humanity, that makes us want to do things we'd be ashamed if our friends and family saw. Sex, drugs, violence, shattering glass. We're a glorified cleanup crew. The police brings us in to support. We can clean up broken glass without any of the hassle. No brooms, no dustpans, no errant glass. And if you're like me, you can read the glass. Most people don't know that's possible, not even people with extra abilities. It's a bit of an open secret. Glass mending isn't taken too seriously, you know? Of course you know. It's not useful like skin knitting or incendiaries. It's an uncommon but frivolous ability. But I'm the only person I've heard of who can read the stories in the fractures. It goes like this. They teach you in training to envision all these shards and splinters as both separate pieces and as they were when they were whole. Then you imagine knitting it all back together. That's glass mending 101. It looks like some X-Men shit, hands out and glass lifting into the air. I'm explaining this for a reason, I promise. Plus, I figure whoever you are, listener in the government, you aren't a glass mender. While a regular glassmender envisions the reuniting of the whole, I can read the intent behind the shattering. Example. They call me for a lot of domestic violence cases. Say there's an alcoholic who beats on his wife. Maybe he tried to throw a beer bottle at her head and missed. Or maybe he threw a punch at a window without thinking. Before the mending, in the middle of it all, I can sense the anger, the violent intent. I can also sense the point of impact and, more important, who was responsible. The origin. Like, if this guy was a white male in his mid-30s, that kind of thing. No wonder the police want me around. I have a lot of stories like that. They're not fun stories. They keep me up after a long night shift, and I watch the sun hit the sky as I try to fall asleep. Look at me, waxing poetics. 8 days ago was the first instance of simultaneous shattering. It happened all within a 5-mile radius of the central city. Very convenient, seeing as the police station was close to the epicenter. Before I started digging, I thought it was the target. I don't think so anymore. It's a gut feeling, yeah, but this hunch keeps reconfirming itself with each piece of collected information. I don't think that's official protocol, but it is what it is. The first instance happened at around 10:30. All six of us were in the back office of the second floor, tucked away opposite from reception, general police business, and even the detectives. It's never really been an issue since we're not needed in the thick of it all. The only windows sit behind me, but we work at night. No big deal, right? No need to see the sunshine when there's no sunshine to see. Wrong. Every single piece of glass in the room shattered at once. The window behind me, the light bulbs above us, the glass screens of our phones and computers, and we couldn't do anything about it. Complete darkness followed soon after. The glass hit the back of my neck, and my first thought was just pain. Think of a paper cut slicing into you, and amplify that by 100. The bulk of it hit my back, and the tiny little splinter scraped across my arms. The wet, sticky blood dripped and dripped down my back, and that sensation brought me back into the moment. Then it was, oh fuck, my spinal cord, and I dropped into fetal position with my hands protecting my neck. A bit too late. It's a bit dumb, but I felt a bit betrayed by the glass. I had always thought of us as made of the same stuff, or at least the glass and I had some sort of understanding, but in the end, it cuts us like all the messes we're sent to clean up. We're not soldiers. We're just civilians who can do fancy things with glass. We were never taught things like stopping glass in midair, because when the hell would that actually happen? Seriously. Maybe it would be a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence, and you'd be too swept up in the moment to actually use that information constructively. How do you weaponize that? The government didn't think of that before it happened. I'm a bit scared about what that means for us all now. When logic came back to me, I was surprised and disoriented. I mean, the adrenaline was rushing through me and my pulse was so loud I couldn't hear anything else. But if this was a terrorist attack, another plot on yet another building, how come it was so quiet? How come there was no screaming? How come there was no other noise? How come I couldn't hear anything other than my goddamn pulse? I reached for my phone to turn on the flashlight mode, but obviously that wasn't going to work. It wasn't functional without the glass screen. My actual flashlight wouldn't work either. I could see it in my head, the black industrial flashlight in the bottom drawer of my desk, but I was willing to bet the glass was blown clean out of that as well. I was too scared to move. I mean, there was glass everywhere. And then I almost said aloud, "I remember this so clearly. You're a glass mender. Why are you afraid of a little glass?" I sat up as carefully as I could, trying not to move my body on top of the shards. I couldn't see a damn thing. I had never tried to mend the glass without seeing it before. How could I envision the individual pieces in the whole if I didn't know what they looked like? It was then that I decided to stop asking questions and to stop making excuses and to stop being an overall useless little bitch. I envisioned the tiny, boring window that always sat behind me, the one that basically tried to kill me a minute or two ago, and I pretended I could see all of those individual shards. I mean, a chunk of it did slice the skin of my neck. I imagined knitting them all together. In the middle of it all, what I read in the fractures almost made me drop all the shards. It was screaming, "Out, out, 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 out." It was the need to escape wrapped up in every single word. Underneath that, there was the little twinge of something sinister. I almost didn't catch it. Whatever it was, it craved flesh and meat and blood and bone. It was a strange amalgamation of the primal and the logical. I know for a fact it wasn't human. It was intelligent enough to be, though. This new fear flooded me. I couldn't read the origin. There was nothing. No clear perpetrator at all. Only the intent. that intense need for escape mixed with the bloodlust. It hurt to hold this feeling without a place for it to go. So I swept past it. I went back to the mending so I could make the window whole again. I couldn't see it in the dark, but I knew the window was pristine again. My blood wouldn't be on it. And the blood wasn't pounding in my ears anymore. That's when I noticed the other glass menders had taken my cue to start cleaning up the mess. "You need to stop," I told them, "at least for a moment. I need to check if they all came from the same source." I remember Sarah saying, "No shit, it came from the same source." I can never tell if she likes being contrary for the sake of it or genuinely disagreed with me. I couldn't see her, obviously, but I could imagine that snarky smile that always sneaks onto her face. Even in the dark, I'm sure she could tell I was going to argue because she spoke again. She said, "Everything shattered at once, so obviously it's all from the same source. We can't do anything in the fucking dark. Just fix a damn light bulb and then you can exhaust yourself checking everything." I nodded my head, but obviously she couldn't see me. I told her, "Just fix a damn light bulb." So she fixed a damn light bulb. As the light turned on, everyone turned to me. Of course, I was thinking things like, obviously they want to know what I read in the glass, what kind of threat we're up against, blah, blah, blah. All of this adrenaline was pumping through me, and everyone in my department was looking at me. I felt a bit cocky. That would be a bit of an understatement, honestly. It was nice to have your ego stroked. But when their looks stayed frozen and wide-eyed, I realized they were staring at all the blood. Orlando's eyes were fixated on my neck. Sarah's mouth was pressed into a firm line. And the other three, Charles, Letty, and Leo, had eyes bigger than a tea saucer. I couldn't see it, but I know it looked worse than it felt. I had adrenaline pumping through my veins still, and I had so many things to do and information to share. The department couldn't afford for me to be injured. I stood up, making sure I didn't step onto any of the glass. I said, "I know I look like a horror movie, but just ignore it for a sec. Just a second. God, Orlando, just shut up. I know you didn't say anything, but just shut up before you do. I couldn't get a reading on the glass. There's no origin. I can't tell who it came from." That wiped the concerned expressions off their faces. Actually, the news expanded their concerned expressions. Then, the killjoy of my life, the bane of my existence, Detective Larson, barreled into the room. He looked like an office manager that got stranded in the wild for a few hours. No joke. His normally pristine, pressed button-up was all mussed up. His tie was loose from his neck, and he was holding out a lighter like it was the last precious light in the world. To be fair, it was pitch dark until we fixed that one light bulb. I know now that we were the one light in a 5-mile radius, but at that time, I didn't know if it was just the building, the block, or the whole damn city. Hindsight makes it less terrifying, but the memory of being in the thick of it all is terror-inducing. His eyes were drawn to that one light bulb like a moth to a flame. He kept his eyes trained on it while he barked orders at all of us. "Ortiz, front and center. I need a report from you. Then you'll be boots on the ground in specialized task forces. Ortiz, speak." I told him what I told the glass menders, that the source isn't human, and that's probably why I couldn't read it. And I explained the bloodlust and the urge to get out. After I was quiet, he finally looked at me. I never really noticed it before, but Detective Larson has a lot more wrinkles than a man his age should have. Not that I know or want to know his age. Not even. Gross. But I bet everyone thinks that gives him wisdom and experience and all that jazz. Not me. I think it means he's worked himself so hard that he's sucked the joy out of his own life. He asked me then, "Have you ever read any fractures caused by a non-human?" It wasn't the question I was expecting. There were so many other questions he could have and should have asked, I feel. The ones I had been asking myself that I don't even have the answers to. I shook my head no. He didn't speak to me anymore after that. He snapped his fingers at Sarah. "Marshall, clean Ortiz up. She's in need of medical attention." She snapped right back at him, and for a second, I actually liked her. She told him, "I'm not trained in first aid, sir. It looks like she might even need to see a skin mender." He laughed at her and said, "There are more pressing matters going on than a few cuts. We need Ortiz out there in the field right now. We've got a city to clean up, and we'll start with this office right here." He explained the general game plan. I would go into a room and repair something, anything, just to get a read on the glass. If it was the same origin as the blast in our office, the glassmenders would come and clean up after. No room or area would be mended until I sampled it. After I was done with every room in the police station, we would respond and repair all the glass disturbances in the city. God damn if it didn't feel nice to feel important and needed. I won't lie, my biggest flaw is I'm a bit of a power-hungry ladder climber. I know this about myself. It's why I've had like one friend my whole life, and her and I barely speak. I'm too busy trying to wriggle my way upwards through a dead-end assignment. It's a damn shame that your future career path is decided by your aptitude and powers manifested in adolescence. Especially if you're a glassmender, there's basically no upward mobility. So this event, it's my golden chance. This case is my shot to be something more than a glorified maintenance worker. Maybe even an opportunity to be truly appreciated for the thankless work I do. God, look at me, talking about my dreams and aspirations and corny shit like that. I went into every single stupid room of the police station with Detective Larson leading the way with a stupid lighter. Because I'm practical, and I want to see, and I also don't want people stumbling around in the dark and falling into glass. My first order of business was to fix a light bulb in each room. And because I didn't want the entire sample size to be from shattered light bulbs, I also mended an additional object in each room. My repairs and readings went like this. Light bulb, phone screen. Light bulb, window pane. Light bulb, computer screen, etc. If you would like a full list of the sample size, you can refer to the report I submitted to Detective Larson, who insisted I make one for reference. Every single reading was the same as the back office. Out. Blood. Out. Flesh. No origin point, and no point of impact. It was like force exerted on every single point of the glass. I told Detective Larson this, and then he wrote this down in a little notebook he kept in the front of his pocket. What a douche. By the time I went into each new room and area of the police station, I was beyond exhausted. Sweat was leaking out of every pore of my face, and my armpits and chest were sticky with it. The blood didn't even stand out to my senses anymore. If I paid attention, I could catch a whiff of it, but otherwise, it faded to background noise. I had a job to do. Before I could rest, they made me do a reading of every room of the hospital down the road. This was a necessity. It had to be cleaned up. The injured had to be put somewhere safe. I did the same thing with the hospital. I read and mended an object in each room. I was a dead man walking. The fatigue was setting into my bones. I didn't think my body could handle it anymore. I could only focus on three things: mending, reading, reporting, repeat. The doctors and nurses were probably staring. They probably protested that someone in my condition shouldn't be in charge of fixing the hospital. But they didn't know that only I could do this, that I was the only one who could figure out what the hell was going on. And I doubt Detective Larson bothered to fill them in. Every reading I made was the same exact shit as I read at the police station. All this destruction came from the same source. After I finished the third floor out of eight, someone led me to a hospital bed. I don't know who it was, honestly. I don't remember anything except the work. I slept for 18 hours. As I stated before, every single piece of glass was shattered in a 5-mile radius. It was mostly businesses, industrial. Only a small portion of it was residential. While I slept, the team of glass menders cleaned up the city. They left one object at each site broken just for me. Aw, how sweet. When I finally woke up, I woke up clean and pretty and new. There were no cuts or scrapes or bandages. I didn't even smell like blood or sweat anymore. I could talk about the hospital release to you. Honestly, it was so typical and boring. They asked me how I felt and if I was well rested and suggested I stay another night. God, my hands were twitching just to get out of there. I couldn't just lie down and rest when I knew I could be useful for once, for something actually important. I didn't want to be on the bench anymore. I still don't. They had washed my clothes, which was a pleasant surprise. There was a faded brown stain from the blood they tried and failed to completely wash out on the back of my button-up. I put it on and threw my blazer over it. It was time to get to work. When I went to the police station, they were prepared for me. They sent me straight to Detective Larson when I got there. Big surprise. He didn't say anything about me being in the same clothes as I was the day before. I don't even know if he noticed or cared. He sat down in the chair of his office and grabbed a plastic packet of papers and forms from his drawer. He placed it on the table and pushed it in front of me. He told me, "Ortiz, I'm promoting you to field officer. You'll be in charge of this case and figuring out what is responsible for this shit show. I am your direct supervisor. You'll report to me at the end of every shift. Wear this." He threw an ID card with a lanyard attached to it. It had the same picture as my ID card before, except this time it said field officer, City Police Department. He told me, "Here's a list of sites you need to visit. Read the remaining objects left behind by your fellow glassmenders." I didn't argue like I normally would have. I told him yes, sir, and got the hell out of Dodge. I wasn't going to give him the chance to change his mind. Like hell I was. It took me 8 hours. Most of it was travel, and I had to write my findings on a pad of paper. I couldn't say I was surprised after this event was said and done. I went to every single site they had fixed up in City for me. To my shock, every single bottle, window, screen, you name it, came up as the same readings as the police station and the hospital. No origin, no point of impact, just escape and freaky lust for flesh. Dear listener in the government, I'm sorry if you find this repetitive and cliche and boring to hear, but it was the reality of what happened. Oh, except for one site, which a guy accidentally knocked over his glass of water, and it was mixed up with the other water glass that was left for me to fix. That was an exciting false alarm. This is all so incredible. I mean, people got hurt and things got destroyed, but it's all good. No one died. A few car accidents, but no fatalities. So I'm not feeling too bad about it all. I'm psyched to sink my teeth into it. Field Officer 60302 signing out. God, this is amazing. You'll be hearing from me soon. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Fracture is created by me, Claire Wright. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Reddit, The Moon, at Fracture Podcast. The voice of Gwen Ortiz is Ayla. Production, sound engineering, and theme music is also by Ayla. You can check out how multi-talented and kick-ass her music is on Instagram, at HeyAyla. Logo art is by Matt Reed. You can check out his badass art on Instagram, at m_r92. Special thanks to Clarice Medinilla for her insightful and entertaining copy editing. If you enjoyed Fracture, please rate and review us on iTunes. It's the easiest way for new listeners to find us. Fracture is only possible because of listeners. Become a patron of the show at patreon.com/fracturepodcast. You'll be able to access annotated scripts as well as other exclusive behind-the-scenes bonus content such as bloopers and episode discussions once available. Also, how did you learn you were capable of that kind of violence?